For WKU Public Radio, I'm Barbara Deeb. Remember in November became the rallying cry this year among many Kentucky teachers, highlighting their deep rift with Governor Matt Bevin over pension reform and education proposals. A number of those teachers are stepping up their activism to help elect Bevin's Democratic challenger, Andy Beshear. Lisa Autry introduces us to some of them in this report.
Chris McCoy is on a mission to make Matt Bevin a one-term governor.
17. Yeah, we need 865 Richland, is that what it is?
Yeah, Richland Drive.
McCoy has been knocking on doors since July for Governor Bevin's Democratic challenger, Andy Beshear.
I've been in the education field for 15 years, and I've never seen teachers get this excited over an election.
McCoy teaches at Jackson Academy in Bowling Green. On a Saturday morning earlier this month, he canvassed the Briarwood subdivision.
I've run into a couple of Republican teachers. I've told them plainly, look, sometimes you've got to put party politics aside and vote for the guy who's going to be the best for educators.
McCoy is a member of the Kentucky Teachers Retirement System, and he's worried about having a pension when he retires. He sees Beshear as the best candidate to protect benefits already promised to educators. Bevin has maintained an adversarial relationship with many teachers after proposing sweeping changes to their benefits in an effort to return their pension system to solvency. Some teachers also feel the Republican governor has made disparaging comments about them for protesting at the state capitol during the legislative session, at one point describing them as drowning victims who needed to be knocked out and dragged to shore. Several retired teachers went on a statewide Won't Be Bullied by Bevin tour. Among those on the tour is Dave Strode, a retired educator from Warren County.
We're tired of being intimidated, belittled, when educators are on the front line working with the most valuable resource that we have in our state.
Bevin has stated that he regrets nothing he has said about educators and that his comments have been taken out of context. The Republican incumbent also maintains he's the only governor to fully fund the teachers' retirement system.
The apple doesn't fall far from the tree, and Andy Beshear's dad robbed $8 billion from the teachers' pension plan.
Bevin accuses former Governor Steve Beshear of taking money from the retirement system and spending it elsewhere. Bevin also highlights that he's the first governor to use 100% of lottery proceeds for education.
And I'm also putting more money per pupil into the classrooms in the SEEK formula than ever in the history of the state.
While Bevin has called out his opponent for sending his children to a private school, Beshear has built his campaign around courting public school teachers, embarking on his own Stop the Bullying tour.
I believe that leadership is about leading for every family and understanding that just because someone disagrees with you doesn't make them your enemy. It's time we have a governor that acts like an adult.
If elected, Beshear has promised $2,000 across-the-board pay raises for teachers and pledged to establish a student loan forgiveness program for educators. Bevin has criticized him for not offering specifics on how he would pay for the proposals. In a governor's race that's become personal, teachers are working to excite Democratic voters and, most importantly, get them to the polls. Brenda McGown of Warren County heads the Kentucky Retired Teachers Association.
And we do have retired teachers that are working at the local campaign headquarters. They're making phone calls. They're sending emails. After all, our current governor was elected with 18% of the registered voters in Kentucky. That's no mandate.
But will the teachers' activism be enough to deliver a Democratic governor in a state where 62.5% of voters supported President Donald Trump in the 2016 election? The big test is Tuesday when Kentuckians cast their ballots. For WKU Public Radio, I'm Lisa Autry. When you drive through Hodgenville, you notice soon that this is Lincoln Country. The presence of our nation's 16th president is felt everywhere. Statues in the middle of the town square, Lincoln National Bank, the Lincoln's Loft bookstore, and the local radio station Abe 93.7.
Our town sees anywhere from 200,000 to 250,000 visitors each year.
That's Rob Thurman, assistant director of the Lincoln Museum. Tourism is the lifeblood of this town of 3,500. The main draw is the Abraham Lincoln Birthplace National Historical Park. Visitors get to see the first Lincoln Memorial ever built in the U.S., which houses a replica of the cabin where Lincoln was born. The partial government shutdown has closed the gates to the attraction. Across the road from the National Park is the Lincoln General Store. Owner Nikesh Patel says he's had a lot of confused customers.
They come here and ask us why they shut down. They come all over from the different state and like that, and they have to go back.
Next to the general store is the Lincoln Lodge that includes a gift shop and motel. Owner Regina McDowell says it's tough seeing the disappointed faces.
Because I had a family in here the other day and they had their two little kids with them, and the kids did not understand at all why they could not go in. But they had drove, you know, several states away just to get here.
As the partial government shutdown enters its third week, the Lincoln Museum's Rob Thurman says President Trump and Congress could take a cue from history.
The way that he was able to build so many bridges with people who had different views, and how Lincoln found ways to make compromise, even in members of his own political party, people from differing political parties, and how he brought people together to create a reunified country.
In an 1861 speech, President Abraham Lincoln said, "If the great American people will only keep their temper on both sides of the line, the troubles will come to an end." Those are words that perhaps shouldn't be lost on a divided nation 158 years later. For WKU Public Radio, I'm Lisa Autry. Some of GM's hourly workers in Bowling Green are picketing outside the Corvette assembly plant after their contract expired over the weekend. Among the protesters is Jeffrey Miles, who supports a family of seven with his job.
I've been out here since 3 a.m., just standing there in the hot sun, just trying to let people know that, hey, we all need to be treated fairly.
Miles is joining roughly 49,000 of his counterparts in the first nationwide strike involving GM since 2007. One of the main sticking points in the contract negotiations is the use of temporary workers on a long-term basis. Kelsey Bragg is nearing the three-year mark as a temp at the Corvette plant.
I don't get the profit sharing. I don't get any of the holiday bonuses. I don't get any of the dental care, the vision care. I don't get days off. We get three unpaid vacation days. We don't get anything that they get really other than health care.
The Bowling Green factory currently has 43 temporary workers, a relatively small percentage compared to other GM facilities. Another point of contention in contract talks is the use of a tiered wage system, which requires some workers to put in 8 years before they gain full wages and benefits. Jason Watson is a member of UAW Local 2164 and serves as the local bargaining chairman. He says the union made lots of concessions to keep the automaker from bankruptcy during the Great Recession.
They clearly have positioned themselves as a company to be in a much better position. Let's now address some of those things that we compromised on with you years ago.
Union leaders also argue GM workers deserve a bigger slice of the company's record profits, which they say have totaled $35 billion in North America over the last 3 years. They also want a better pension plan and assurances of no more plant closures. The strike comes nearly a year after the automaker shuttered five plants in the U.S. Leaders at the Corvette plant have so far declined to give media interviews. For WKU Public Radio, I'm Lisa Autry. Amy Doolin described her daughter Gabby as her heart and soul as she sobbed her way through a statement that she waited to make since November 14, 2015. That's when Gabby's body was found behind Allen County Scottsville High School, only minutes after she went missing from her brother's football game. Allen Circuit Judge Janet Crocker accepted a plea deal Madden reached in August, avoiding a trial that could have resulted in the death penalty. The judge sentenced Madden to life in prison with no chance of parole. Gabby's cousin, Lori Wilson, spoke after the sentencing.
Please remember Gabby. And today we saw justice for Gabby Doolin. 1,439 days. That's what it took.
The sentencing was interrupted halfway through Amy Doolin's statement when Gabby's father, Brian, yelled and charged toward Madden and his attorney, arguing they weren't showing the family respect by whispering during the victim impact statement. Madden did not address the court, and instead his attorney read a statement in which he suggested that evidence against him had been planted by law enforcement and that justice wouldn't be served until the right person was behind bars. Judge Crocker responded that Madden had shown great cowardice by maintaining his innocence. For WKU Public Radio, I'm Lisa Autry.